den, vážení televizní diváci. Amy McKinnon vystudovala politologii, rusistiku a také česká studia na univerzitě v Glasgow a nyní zastává funkci reportéra pro národní bezpečnost v americkém časopise Foreign Policy. Je tedy expertka na Rusko, na bezpečnost Spojených států a právě se vrátila z Kyjeva. Budeme s ní dnes hovořit anglicky, proto se omlouvám za ty titulky, o nynější krizi Rusko-Ukrajina. Amy, good afternoon. You've just come back from Kyiv. What was it like there?
It was exceedingly normal. I mean, to walk around the streets of Kyiv, you wouldn't really know that anything unusual was going on. I mean, the shops are full. There's no sign of panic buying. Kyiv's very chic restaurants and cafes are all full of people. There was a queue to get into the opera last night, apparently. So on the surface, it's very normal. But when you talk to people, I mean, there is this kind of new vocabulary which is starting to creep into conversations where people are kind of saying that they have, you know, jerry cans of petrol in their car just in case they have to leave quickly, that they're taking first aid classes. They're talking about going to stay with relatives in Western Ukraine, which is thought to be safer and beyond the reach of Russia. So Ukrainians themselves are starting to make preparations just in case the worst should happen. But most people on the surface are keeping calm. And there's been a concerted effort by the Ukrainian president, by the authorities to prevent panic. They're very worried about protecting the Ukrainian economy because they fear that if the economy is destabilized, that that may lead to political unrest, social destabilization, and that that's exactly the kind of unrest that Russia would seek to take advantage of.
How long were you there?
I was there for a week. I arrived Friday, the 4th of February, and I flew back yesterday, the 13th mm-hmm. of February.
Who did you talk to?
I met with a range of experts, kind of political scientists. I met with the head of the American Chamber of Commerce, who gave me a great perspective on how businesses are feeling. I met with first aid trainers. On Saturday, my first day there, I went to a training run by the Ukrainian Women's Guard, which is a local nonprofit, a volunteer group, and it was a training on urban survival for women, and it was teaching women things like how to pack a medical kit, how to distill water, basically how to survive in times of extreme warfare should the worst happen. And I spoke to people there after the event, and they were pretty calm and level-headed, and saying that, you know, they were hoping that, you know, it wouldn't get too bad, that but that they wanted to know these things just in case, you know.
Well, there has been this narrative that Zelensky has been repeating, that what danger, we've been living in a war with Russia for the past 7 or 8 years. So did the Ukrainian politicians that you were speaking to repeat this, or did they have a different view, or what was the sort of attitude of the Ukrainian government authorities in Kyiv, apart from Zelensky's desire to protect the economy, which could actually tank if there is this talk constantly of impending invasion?
Well, not just officials, but absolutely everybody I met with, down to kind of civilians, ordinary people in Kyiv, to combat veterans, to officials, political scientists. Everybody was quick to point out that Ukraine already is at war with Russia, and they have been since 2014. And I think a lot of Ukrainians see this as this latest buildup as on that continuum, as part of Russia's ongoing efforts to destabilize Ukraine, which have waxed and waned over the past 8 years. But I think where there has been this kind of disconnect between what we're hearing from Washington, from officials here, is that I think the US does see this as something distinct. I think US officials do see this as something potentially unprecedented. And Biden himself has said that this could be the largest land war that Europe has seen since World War II. And he has described it as something that could potentially change the world. So the US is putting it in the most stark terms possible, but I think Ukrainians more see this as part of Russia's ongoing efforts to destabilize the country rather than something necessarily unprecedented.
Well, there is this view. The Ukrainian ambassador to London said on Channel 4 News, I think yesterday, that the problem is that Russia really wants to... Putin's argument is this thing, Ukraine is a joke. It's not a country. It can't function. And they are really basically trying to destabilize it economically and politically and otherwise to such an extent that it will not be able to function. And unfortunately, that Ukrainian ambassador was saying that some American warnings are kind of contributing to it a little bit, because it will make the economy tank if everybody thinks that Russia will invade on Wednesday or whatever like that. Do you have any information about all these warnings from the CIA or whatever, that the invasion is impending, that it'll happen on Wednesday? Have they provided any evidence, or how is it? What do you think of it, what the Americans are saying?
I have been very struck from the moment that this kind of began, which was late October, beginning of November. I was immediately struck by the level of concern that I was hearing in Washington. I wrote my first story about this renewed buildup on November 1st. And at that time, I think in the story, we only described it as unexplained troop movements between sites near the Ukrainian border. We weren't at that time describing it as a buildup, because on satellite, on publicly available satellite imagery, that's all you could see. There wasn't really a lot to see. It didn't seem that alarming to me on the face of it. But what was very unusual was sources I speak to in Washington, just who I'd spoken to in the spring when Russia began this buildup last spring in 2021. Sources I spoke to then, who of course were alarmed. I mean, unexplained movements, unexplained military buildups are never a good thing, particularly from an unpredictable country like Russia. But there was a marked change in their tone. They felt that there had been a real shift in the Kremlin's position on Ukraine, and that had been evident in statements from Russian officials, that their red line had shifted with regards to Ukraine, and that they did appear to be building the military capacity to force a shift in that red line. And very early on, you saw very intensive diplomacy from the American side. And so that, to me, suggested that the Americans have been seeing something in their intelligence which has them very, very, very disturbed indeed. The other thing I would point to is, I think, you know, even within Europe, there has been degrees of difference between how the allies within NATO and members of the European Union are seeing this. But what has been very notable has been that countries along Russia's western flank, such as Poland, the Baltic states, countries who dealt with Russia in the communist period, are exceedingly alarmed and seem to have few illusions about Moscow's ambitions. But also countries within the Five Eyes, so that's the intelligence sharing alliance with the US, such as Canada and the UK, they have also been far more alarmed than, say, French or German officials who are not part of Five Eyes. So that, I think, there is some intelligence going around that the US has about what Moscow's intentions are. That's kind of, I haven't seen it. I don't know what it is. I've asked, no one will tell us, obviously. It's a deeply classified matter, but that has been my thinking kind of all along in this, is that the US has picked up something that has them this deeply concerned. The Ukrainians say that, you know, I spoke on Saturday with someone who's been read in on the Ukrainian intelligence, and they just don't see the threat as the same. They say that they're obviously very concerned. The Ukrainian armed forces are exercising this week. The military is kind of preparing for the worst case scenario, but they don't see the threat as imminent as the US does. And that seems to be where there's been this biggest disconnect, is over the imminency and potential scale of an attack that Russia might be planning.
There are also these views that possibly, and this was, I think, expressed also by that Ukrainian ambassador, that if actually the Americans reveal that, I don't know, for instance, the Russians are preparing a false flag operation, that they basically paralyze it. And that if they reveal that the Russians are going to invade on Wednesday, they will not invade on Wednesday, because it'll be revealed. Now, this is an interesting view. The Ukrainian ambassador kind of expressed the optimism that this may actually prevent the invasion if the Americans keep doing it. However, the opposite view, critical of America, is that the Americans are inventing it. So what's your position about this? You think that they do have serious intelligence, the American Secret Services?
So, I mean, America has 17 intelligence agencies at its disposal, at its disposal. And there's been a huge amount of huge amount of American spy planes over Ukraine in recent weeks, who are obviously keeping close tabs on what Russia's doing. I mean, it's been an interesting approach, and one that I think actually is incredibly smart, given what we know about Russia's MO, and particularly how it works in Ukraine. I mean, part of the way they operated in 2014 was with this kind of veil of plausible deniability, right? They sent troops into the Donbass. We know that now as a fact, but they didn't have Russian flags on them. They weren't, you know, their official, they weren't described, the Russia did not admit to having troops in the Donbass. Similarly, when they overtook Crimea, it was little green men. It was this kind of very hastily organized, improperly conducted referendum. And so they do it with this kind of veneer of plausible deniability. And that kind of, I think, in the early days, at least, a little bit wrong-footed, it caught everybody off guard, and nobody quite knew how to respond to what was essentially an invasion, but an unacknowledged invasion on the part of the aggressor. And I think this time around that the US is trying to be, at every stage from the very beginning of this, they've tried to be very open and very frank to deny Moscow that veneer of plausible deniability. And it's, I think, it's obviously, you know, it comes with a cost to some degree. I think the Ukrainians are very alarmed about the impact that it's having on the economy. But, you know, this is an incredibly complicated crisis. And I kind of see it as a bit of a Rubik's Cube, and that there's several sides, and every move that each party makes has a knock-on effect of all of the several sides. And so, you know, every action taken has a kind of a long chain reaction affecting the different parties involved. And there's, I think, not always harmony about what is the best course of action. One thing I would say is that I think whilst the Ukrainian president is deeply concerned about panic, he seems to conflate kind of civil preparedness with panic. And I think that those two things are distinct. I think that you can, as we've kind of seen during the pandemic from in a lot of countries, I think you can calmly prepare a population and arm them with those kind of basic tools, that basic information that they would need should the worst happen, without causing mass panic and without causing a run on the banks. You know, Ukrainians are not stupid. And this is a country which has, you know, over the past 100 years, you know, it's dealt with the Nazis, it's dealt with Soviet totalitarianism, you know, it's had a famine, it's had the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, it's had been annexed, it's, you know, it's been at war for the past 8 years. Ukrainians are, you know, they're pretty hardy at this stage. And I think I'm not sure it is the most prudent approach to not be preparing the Ukrainians just out of an abundance of precaution, so that people just know the basics of what to do and where to go in the event of an attack.
Mm-hmm. I've just read an analysis which basically says that on past experience, Russia has always retreated if it was presented with power, with force from the West, and it always kind of extended its influence if the West was weak. And one interesting point is that what if Putin doesn't need to invade because he can just saber rattle on those borders with all these troops all the time, and the West is collapsing anyway? And another point that I also heard on Channel 4 News yesterday, I think, was one the kind of analyst was saying the problem is that Europe is dependent absolutely thoroughly on Russian gas, and the Europeans are not going to do anything. Because you cannot imagine that an addict will actually try to neutralize the pimp that's selling him the drugs. What's your view about this?
I think the Russians have already been incredibly successful at kind of changing the channel. You know.
Yes, so everybody's talking about what Putin wants, basically. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And in focusing, putting themselves at the center of conversations about European and transatlantic security. you know, the Biden administration came into office a year ago with great hopes of focusing on China as their core of their national security strategy. And whilst that certainly remains the case, I mean, I don't think any of them expected to have expended quite as much diplomatic effort and oxygen on Russia and on this crisis. And on to the point about, I mean, the Europeans are certainly saying that, you know, the Europeans and Americans, I think at this stage, have their ducks in order in terms of sanctions packages pretty much ready to go. The US package is, I think, ready to roll out almost instantly. And I think the Europeans are closely behind that in the event of a Russian attack on Ukraine. I mean, there's certainly going to be, particularly if this is the kind of assault that the Americans have been warning about. I mean, I think even the more reticent members of the European Union, such as Hungary, I think will be shocked and stunned to get on board with a sanctions package. But I mean, yes, there are, you know, I've spoken to a lot of former sanctions officials here in Washington, and, you know, it's sanctions policy is complicated because, you know, like, as you know, as I said before, with this crisis in general, you know, every action has a reaction. Russia's economy is, you know, it's not Venezuela and it's not Iran. You know, it's deeply embedded in the global economy, even still after 2014, after the sanctions in 2014. And so, you know, you can't just cut it off like you can, you know, Venezuela or a smaller country, because that would have devastating consequences for European economies and for international business. And so there is, you know, European American policymakers have to try and find the options which will extract, you know, real, true, meaningful pain for Russian officials and for Moscow, but without causing too much blowback for their own economies as well. So there's a lot of calibration going on. And certainly one thing that, you know, on the point to energy, the Ukrainians are, and have been for a long time, but are just desperate for America to sanction the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, to stop it in its tracks, because they really see the pipeline as an existential threat, as something which will deprive them of the transit revenues that they get from that, but also will, you know, once Moscow no longer has, you know, critical infrastructure running through Ukraine, it's only going to make it all the more easy for them to dial up the pressure militarily.
Finally, very briefly, to finish, is Putin going to invade or not? Or is it impossible to tell today?
Nobody knows the answer to that other than Putin.
Okay.
And anyone that tells you that they do is being dishonest, but it is certainly not trending in a good direction. I would say that.
Amy McKinnon, thank you very much. Vážení televizní diváci, děkujeme vám za pozornost. Nashledanou.